Honestly, the video made me more nervous than anything else we're going to do together today. And when Jacob got it all ready to go, I'm like, do I get to have the first sneak peek so I can stop being anxious? He did a great job. And if I didn't work with such funny men, this would not happen. There's not an ounce of me that comes to work and is told one day, you're going to go make a video. You're going to talk to nobody, and I'm going to have to do this. And I'm not even going to do this today when I'm talking to you because I'm not going to use big arms. But it is a hoot, so I approve. You did a great job, Jacob. So I'm excited to be with you here this morning. And when we did Pastor's Choice, we get to pick any topic that we want to do. And I think I knew first on the email back after saying no three times. I mean, that was three emails of no, I'm good. Then when I was told I'm not good and we were going to do this, I knew exactly what I wanted to speak to you about. And it was sweet and salty speech. Now, Lee Tigner. No! Oh, he's going to be so crushed. He wouldn't be able to hear me right now anyway because I'm going to talk too fast for him. But you have to tell him this, okay? Because when I talk about sweet and salty speech, I have two memories that trigger for me. One is the fact that I misspoke that passage for an entire year. When my kids go off to school, I spend most of the summer thinking about a Bible verse or a quippy message or motto. I pray on it. I write it to my kids' teachers in a card, to their principals, and it's kind of my little breath prayer as I send them out the door. So I've been doing this for years. We've done, like, be strong and courageous, be a light in the dark world. These are all my favorites. And I spend a whole year saying, have sweet and not salty speech, okay? So what I just said is spiritually wrong for an entire year. So I'm teaching you today that we need to have sweet and salty speech because it goes against kind of our nature. Sweet speech means niceness, right, and kind. And if there's anything I want on my epitaph someday when I'm dead or on my gravestone, I just want to be known that I was a kind person. But we actually want to have sweet and salty speech because it's the flavor of salt. Does that make sense? So, I mean, I'm sure the breath prayer still worked for their year. They're still here. They're still fine. But I did do it wrong. So I'm hoping to maybe it could be next year's, and I can say have sweet and salty speech. And today when you leave, I hope you have both. But salt, the word salt, triggers a completely different memory here at Hillcrest. Flashback about 15 and a half years ago, and my husband and I came for candidating in August, and in all true Hillcrest fashion, you put on a wonderful meal at lunch. He had preached that morning, and we were in the Family Life Center and having our lunch, and then it was a question and answer time. Now, being the good Baptist girl that I am, I'm fully prepared to share my testimony. Doesn't even make me nervous. Thought about all the questions I've been through my mom and dad. My mom's here today. Thanks, Mom. I've been through my mom and dad's Candidating. Thank you. Different candidating things. And so I kind of knew the questions they were going to ask, like, how are you going to partner with your husband in the ministry? And how do you feel about youth ministry? And where are you going to serve in the church? Like, all these questions, right? Do you think those are, like, really good questions you should be asking us? Right? Right? No, that's not what you asked me. Nope. They said, we want to hear from Tarina now. And I thought, okay, I'm ready. And Lee Tigner stands up on the microphone. Do you remember this, Vicky? Oh, I do. And he says, Tarina, I want to hear from you. Sure. Shoot. Whatever you want. Do you know any jokes? There are many things I can do well in this world. Joke telling is not one of them. Not only do I not tell them well, I will not understand yours. And I might not even laugh. Because I really decided that what I thought I didn't understand, I just don't think they're funny. Like, I can't do it. But I do have two funny jokes for you today, and you will laugh. Okay? Yeah, you will. I'm telling you. So I said, not wanting to shy away from any challenge, I'm like, sure, Lee, I've got a joke for you. I mean, I probably don't even know his name is Lee at the time. And I'm sitting at the table in the Family Life Center, so all these things are here. And I go, and don't blow my punchline. I don't like that either. Just setting you up for being a kind audience, okay? What is this? Assault with a deadly weapon! Thank you. This is just as funny as it gets, people. And what is this? Hello, salt. Hello, pepper. Season's greetings. And we're done. Like, Ryan can't even, like, humor me right now. I just raised the dork status to an all new level. I mean, I do have a couple others about strawberries, but it has nothing to do with my message, so I will spare you with those jokes. But when I think about salt, I do think about Lee Tigner. And I don't think there was another question asked of me that day. I think I've been here 15 and a half years, and you may not have heard my testimony ever. And it's a great one. But your loss, I had a joke. And the only reason I knew those jokes is because I sang with the Madrigal Singers, and it was a dinner theater we put on in college in my big Madrigal gown, and we had to do these dumb prop jokes in between songs. That's why I have that joke. Otherwise, that's it. So please don't ask me for another one. That's all I got. When we look at the word salt, it is filled in Scripture. And I want to show you how in Colossians, where we are supposed to have both salt and sweet speech. So let me read this to you. Colossians 4, 5, and 6 says, "Live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone." We could literally just set camp on Colossians today because it says multiple things we have to do. First of all, amongst non-believers, may your day be filled with non-believers. I hope we don't walk in a tunnel and in a community where we just know that everyone we're in conversation with already loves the Lord. And hopefully many, many, my prayers, all your family members and all the people you love and hold dear do know the Lord. And if they don't, this is why we need to be wise when we're in their presence. We're to make the most of every opportunity. Everything we say and do is going to point people back to Jesus, and to let our conversations be gracious and attractive so that you'll have the right response for everyone. Now, I know full well that we are not prepared for every conversation that comes at us, and we are surprised or taken back or easily defended or offended or have quick responses. But maybe today we learn our own toolbox of how to approach people when something comes at us. I do feel deeply that our words affect people. Our actions, we talk about where we should presently be. I shouldn't be hanging out at a bar. I shouldn't, we know all the different areas where, like, duh, you probably wouldn't see Miss Tarina there. You wouldn't. That's our physical actions. But I can be caught anywhere in a community and have my words mean something to somebody else. But in this day and age, we kind of have forgotten the age-old saying. Who knows what it is? If you have nothing nice to say, don't say it at all. And that really should just be our barometer for our responses. There's also this online media where, just yesterday, and I know that the government shutdown is a big deal, and I know that politics is a big deal, and people are going to share their opinions and their frustrations. But we don't have to banter back to every single person who views something differently than we view something, right? Like stating an opinion and certainly not doing it online. We are shocked when we state something and someone has an opposing view, or we're offended or surprised when someone has a different view than you and they maybe have a response back. If I could invent anything in our world, we would wear sticky notes that would have our trigger words, right? Like, think about it. Like, pretend you have a sticky note right now. There's a few things in your life that you feel very passionate about, right? Like, mama bear will come out in me if you talk to my children in a non-godly encouragement way that's going to challenge our value system, right? Do you have mama bear, daddy bear out there? You might feel very strong about something politically. You would put that as a bullet point on your sticky note. Like, don't mess with me. I'm a Republican. That might be helpful in a conversation, right? So let's pretend we have a little sticky note and think about your trigger points. What are things that people are going to engage you in a conversation? And you're like, oh, don't go there. The first thing you can do is just say, don't go there. You don't have to engage in that conversation. But it also would be super helpful in this community to know each other's stories. That's the beauty of testimonies and being in relationships and small groups and Sunday school. You get to know people's stories. And I get to be more careful and softer with my words because I know where you're coming from. Wouldn't that be an awesome thing if we just kind of had that, like, see-through x-ray ability? Colossians, in your soul provider, if you're following along, tells us that our speech is to be both with salt and be gracious, if you have a fill-in. But what does the Apostle Paul really mean when he writes this in Colossians? He wants us to have seasoned with salt, and instructing us that this secret ingredient would be woven in our conversations with others. If you go back to Colossians 3:8, he says to get rid of slander and obscene talk and to fill our speech with praise and kind words. So we get the two negatives, how we could have a conversation. And we're to fill it with, everybody say it with me, praise, say it, and kindness. So like literally we can just sum those conversations up with people. Am I using my voice to praise and to show kindness? Again, if we were just a kind world, we would be so much happier. Paul also instructs us to give the right response to everyone. Well, we are imperfect human beings. There is no way that you can be prepared for everything. But you can have a tool belt of graciousness and peace and patience that allows you not to respond without thinking first. And that's what God is asking us to do. Think time is something we say when you're learning something new and I'm asking a question. If I don't give you time to respond, each of your brains is going to process that in a different way. So we need that think time. You can ask for think time when you're challenged in a way that you don't know how you want to respond. Or maybe you know that's one of your trigger points on your sticky note, and your very first response wouldn't be the kindest. You can say, you know, I feel really passionate about that, and I want to think about my words before I share it with you today. Those are tool belt tools that we can use when we get feel like we're in a conversation that we wouldn't give our very best foot forward, that wouldn't point people back to Jesus. You can say, let me get back to you. The sweetness of our conversation is the choice of words we have in the conversation that we have with others. And this does include our online conversations. I have a high school friend that I will never probably see again. I don't even think I saw him in my 10-year reunion. And I could easily block him on Facebook for the very differentness of how he lives to how I knew him in high school. But I find when I read his stuff, instead of getting worked up and mad, although he did quote, "You evangelical Christians." I mean, that one stirred a little bubble in me, but I didn't respond. And every time I choose to read his stuff, instead of getting angry or taking him off, I have chose to pray for this man. He was a believer in high school. I know he was. We played drums together. His mom was a piano teacher. We sang. And he is very far from that in what he posts and views and is a lawyer these days. But instead of being offended and wanting to chitter-chat back with that, I'm not going to defend my evangelical Christian beliefs, but I'm going to keep believing, and I'm going to take that opportunity to pray for this man instead of having a conversation that would not go well, because he could outspeak me. He's a lawyer. I mean, I would be done and probably crying and running out of the room in 2 seconds. So why engage that, right? I couldn't do it. But it does give me an opportunity to pray and know that he feels very strongly about something that I feel very, very differently about. When we send texts or like emails to people, I am completely teased by my family about the amount of emoticons. Has anyone received a text from Miss Tarina? And how many emoticons? Just last night, Erica, how many emoticons did you get? At least three. It was the laughing face, and it was the, I mean, she probably was serious, but I'm telling her she was kidding, that she wanted me to move the movie night because of the Vikings game. I wouldn't move the movie night if the Packers were playing, just so you know, authentic. They would be in another room watching, but I'm not going to do it, right? So I'm like, ha, Erica, not moving it, smiley face, you know, because it could be heard like this. I'm not moving it. You can't read a person's tone in text, can you? So think about if you're having a crabby day and you get a response from a family member or a sibling or your spouse, and it just says, I'm not moving it. Erica could easily think, I'm going to owe you $20 now. I used your name like 5 times. I'm being very careful not to use any names over here. I'd go broke. I've got 4 kids. Erica isn't going to charge me. Could easily have seen my text as, I'm not moving it. But she would know that my character probably wouldn't be crabby, but I put a funny face and the laughing face next to it. Maybe use some more emoticons when you respond. Because if I was in a crabby mood and I heard a response that I couldn't read a person's tone or text, I could easily inflict my daily emotions into somebody's response and blow up a situation that doesn't even need to happen, right? How many times have you read into something, heard something, someone has a conversation with you, and because of what your current emotion is, you have blown it up? Anyone? Anyone blown something up to a proportion that wasn't there? Oh, just my friend Rebecca. No one else? Oh, there's some truth tellers. Okay, I thought so. Yeah, so maybe more emoticons would make our world a happier place. Just a little tidbit for you today. But I have some funny things about salt that I didn't realize, and I have some scientific people out here, I'm sure, that want to know the salt facts in the world. For starters, when I first started baking, I gotta say that when they asked for a pinch of salt or a dash of salt, I felt a little stubborn, and I'm like, no, I really don't need to add a pinch of salt to my brownies. I'm not gonna do it. Just gonna ignore that recipe, or a pinch of salt to my cookies or whatever it is. But when you look at baking and you look at the ingredients you're putting together, it is the salt that coaxes out the most delicious flavors, whether it be in sweets or something else. And I have to tell you, the most heavenly thing you could have in the world is caramel covered with dark chocolate with sea salt on the top. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. You may have your own thing. My husband would say the best sweet and salty thing he could eat is a Monte Crisco. I don't know who puts meat with jelly and deep fried bread with powdered sugar, but the man loves it. My taste buds can't mix that kind of thing, but you give me dark chocolate with sea salt caramel and you are my best friend. So let me tell you, when you're baking, you need to have that salt to coax out the best flavors. So how can we coax out the very best flavors of us as we add salt to our conversations? If you're doing your soul provider fill-in, salt is a valuable preservative. Fact, people, salt is the most used flavor enhancer of the world. Over 250 million salt is produced each year. Salt is used in all cultures, all across the world, and in America, we use it on just about everything. Now, I'm not an over-salter person, so if you are struggling in the salt area because your levels are not so good, I apologize, but I'm more of a pepper gal. But salt does bring out the very best flavors, or it dresses up a meal when it doesn't feel super flavorful, makes it a little more exciting to your tater tot hot dish. But in our conversations, we can add salt. So I'm going to give you a couple examples of what salt does in our world and how we can use that in our conversations with other people. Salt preserves. Do your words preserve God's word? Are we helping to improve a situation and keep decay from happening? Think on that. Salt is valuable, and we know that we are very valuable to God. Do our words add value to this conversation at hand, or are your words empty and worthless? Salt purifies and softens. I love this one because it makes me think of the ladder that we use in premarital counseling. Are you going to one-up the person in an argument, or are you going to soften that conversation and bring it down a ladder? It's a great visual to think about. To soften our words, make them pure and truthful. Are they soft and kind, or are they harsh and hostile? We are all good Dakotans here, and we know that salt melts ice. We need that, right? So just like, picture how you've sprinkled your ice, the salt on your sidewalk, and just each little salt has broken away parts of this really stubborn ice. Do our words are they used in such a way that it's going to melt an icy situation? Conversations, are you bringing the best out in other people or the worst? And salt prevents infection and wounds. When conversations start to turn ugly, do your words try to help heal and prevent further toxicity, or are you going to spread more? So when you use salt, you're going to think about those icy sidewalks again. I love those visual pictures because it will help us when we get stuck on another time. There's so many uses for salt. And Jesus uses salt in his scriptures time and time again. And what I love is that it's a biblical image, but it transcends all of these years. So what salt meant in Jesus's time means something to us today. When I say the word salt, or if I were to make you pour this into your hand, I'm just going to pour it in my hand. You use all five senses for salt. Do you know the smell of salt? Do you know the taste of salt? You can feel it, you can see it, and you can hear it. All five senses are evoked. So Jesus did not make any mistakes when he used that as his primary word example in his scriptures, because today in 2018, we feel and see it the same way he meant when he was teaching his disciples. I love how Jesus gathered people along and just taught to them. He had conversations, he had all kinds of examples, and one of my favorite is the Sermon on the Mount. And there's lots of different chunks that the Sermon on the Mount when he's preaching. So this is in Matthew chapter 5. This section in Matthew, he starts off with the Beatitudes. And I don't know if anyone's friends with Chloe Lang here at Hillcrest, but she is there literally today. Just yesterday, she posted a picture. If I was quippy enough, I would show you Chloe's picture from Facebook, but I don't know how to get there. But she literally posted a picture yesterday where she is standing where the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount was preached. What an example. What a neat thing. So visually picture a mountainside, and Jesus is there, and he's gathered all of his disciples, and he uses all kinds of real-life examples for the time to really get us to understand. And again, it transcends all these years to today. On the Sermon on the Mount is Matthew chapter 5, 13 through 16, if you're following along. I'm going to read to you. You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it's lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? It will be thrown out, trampled underfoot as worthless. You are the light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light for everyone to see in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. He makes no mistake when he compares salt and light. And if you remember my quickie breath prayers, I said have sweet, not salty, but now we're going to say it the right way. Have sweet and salty speech, and we are to be a light in a dark world. Those are two of my most favorite sayings. They both challenge us every day in our actions and reactions to people. The light represents the actions, like what am I physically doing that's going to point people back to Jesus? But we use way more words than we use our physical bodies to point people back to Jesus. We use words all day long. So he wants the two to match together when we're when you're a follower of Jesus. When you've taken him as your Lord and Savior, it says in Scripture that you are set apart. There is something different about you. And because of that, they are looking. We know that they're looking for the good, the bad, and the ugly. We know that we don't give our very best foot forward as evangelical Christians in our world. That's all over the news too. But we can only face the battles that right here Tarina has with her community of people and the battles that you have with your community of people. You need to be different. You need to be a light. You need to have sweet and salty speech. Sometimes we just need those reminders. And so I'm a big, big, big lover of breath prayers. I'll pray over my kids, and I know that it's just one of those uncomfortable things of like, I'm fine, you don't need to pray for me. I'm like, well, that's okay, I'm going to pray for you anyway. Like, it's my job as your mother. But breath prayers, they sustain us. They prepare us when we don't even know we need it. So I'm going to give you a breath prayer. If you feel like guarding your mouth, being protective with your words, that today you're not ready to defend or offend in a loving, godly way that points people back to Jesus, I have a list of scriptures I can meet with you on another time, or I can send it to you, where you might have a challenge of certain trigger points or little sticky notes, and what scripture verses are going to point us back to Jesus that can be your breath prayer. But today I'm going to give you Psalms 141:3. And we're going to say it together. But I also like to physically move my body because it reminds me of Bible verses too. Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the doors of my lips. Just a simple little Psalms passage can be your breath prayer if you struggle with what your response to somebody could be. Let's try that together. Psalms 141:3. And you have to move your body like I do. Set a guard over my mouth, O Lord. Keep watch over the doors of my lips. So I've given you my little breath prayer. If that's an area that you struggle, it will keep you maybe from saying something that you'd have to apologize for. And guess what? We are sinful creatures. You're going to have a conversation at some point. It might even be today. If it is, then I didn't do a very good job. So let's make it like tomorrow or Wednesday, where you're going to say something. You didn't give yourself think time. You didn't give yourself the permission to say, can I get back to you on that? If you take it to Jesus before you respond, I promise you, he is going to give you an answer and a response. It doesn't have to come from our brain. It doesn't have to come from our mouths. It doesn't have to come from today's emotion. He is going to give you the response you need, but you have to give it and put it at Jesus' feet first and let him sustain you and give you those words. So what do we do if we mess up? We ask for forgiveness, and it's not enough just to go to God. If I offend or defend myself in a way that I don't think gave my best representation, that I am a lover of Jesus Christ, it is my job to go back to that person and say, I am sorry I took that tone with you. I'm sorry I used those words. Please forgive me. Because God is a grace-filled God, and we get to mess up, and we get to ask for forgiveness, and we get to try again. But it would be really cool and really neat to know that as we further our personal relationship with Jesus Christ, that we become better. That I can use that think time, that I know my response, that I can hold my breath and not have to be on a pedestal for that day. Before I have a little video I'm going to show you about words. I want you to hear the Matthew passage one more time. I love, after I've like studied it in NLT or one version of the Bible, I love to go back to the Message, because the Message is written in a conversation. And I also love to picture Jesus. I'm sure each of you have a Jesus in your head. Mine's probably from the 80s era. If you go to my office, I have some of my very favorite pictures are Jesus with the children and Jesus with the fish. And he's talking to kids, obviously, because I'm working with children. And I love that Jesus had all the time in the world for children, as we should too. But that's kind of what he looks like to me, and I'm a visual processor. So when I read from the Message, it feels like I'm having a conversation with Jesus. So I want you to take your bodies, and I want you to relax. So sometimes we sit a little stressed. Actually, my feet don't touch on these pew chairs. So I slouch, so my feet will touch. So slouch, unless your feet all touch. Do your feet all touch? The struggle is real, people. Originally, Jim Cousy was going to call me 5'4". And I laughed. I said, well, if we're being truthful, I'm 5'1" and shrinking. So we got to be honest. So I want you to relax your bodies. I always encourage kids, whether they are worked up or not paying attention, to take deep breaths. So take a deep breath with me in through your nose, out through your mouth. And open up your body and close your eyes while I read this to you. Pretend that Jesus is sitting next to you having a conversation. He loves you so very deeply. And his words are just a loving conversation back to us, something that is as relevant today as it was then. Sit and listen to Jesus speaking to you today. Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste God? You've lost your usefulness, and you will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in this world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a basket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep an open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. Take a look at this video.
Within our words, an unseen power is set in motion. The tongue is a small thing, but like a tiny spark, can set a great forest on fire. Once spoken, our words begin blazing a trail through the hearts and lives of those around us. One kind word can demolish guilt. It can inspire hope. But the same words have also embraced hatred and executed innocence. Once spoken, our words scorch through feelings and emotions on a level that only they can produce. Your words set up a chain of events beyond your control and of which you will never know. One word can destroy beliefs, harden hearts, or cultivate hatred. But they can also demonstrate faith, display forgiveness, and nurture love. The power of life and death lies in a single word, and we, the image of God, have this power in one word.
Before the worship team sings our final song, I picked a song called Words. We are going to take a benevolent offering. It's the third Sunday of the month. So while they sing the song, an offering plate will be passed. Remember, with the benevolent offering, it's our opportunity as a church to help those that are in need. We get phone calls, we get in-house needs, we get community needs, and this is a way for us just to be good stewards of our own funds to make sure we are helping those. So that will be passed. But before they sing the song, I want to say the words to you, so that when they sing it, it can really resonate. We have two choices every day. We have the choice of our words to be impactful and beautiful and kind, and we have the choice of our words to be harsh and harmful and offensive. We pick that all day, every day. Which person would you want to be, and what do you want to hear every day? Words have made me feel like a prisoner. They've made me feel set free. They've made me feel like a criminal. They've made me feel like a king. They've lifted my heart to places I've never been, They've dragged me down to where I began. Words can build you up and words can break you down, start a fire in your heart or put it out. Let my words be life. Let my words be truth. I don't want to say a word unless it points it back to you.